Okay, so I'm Ashley Crayville, and I am, like was said, from the University of Pennsylvania, and I represent the FIELDS program, which is stands for Fostering Improvement on End-of-Life Decision-Making Science. So I'm going to talk today about knowledge and perceptions of advanced directives among patients with advanced illnesses. So I have no relationships to disclose. So I'll go through briefly my background, why I think it's important to talk about advanced directives in end-of-life care, and why it's an important topic, some of our main objectives, and also our qualitative methods that we used that have already been discussed a little bit. But like many of you already know, qualitative methodology is used for studies and is often, as you begin to analyze the data, new themes can emerge and new hypotheses are generated. So you'll see that we have some refined objectives. So we'll talk a little bit about how we've moved forward with this study. So what we know from the literature is that most Americans express a desire to die at home and avoid aggressive or futile care, yet the opposite often happens. We know that 1 in 5 Americans dies in or shortly following a stay in the ICU, and in the last month of life, half of older Americans visits an emergency room, and 1 in 5 has an inpatient surgery. So these aggressive treatments clearly do not reflect what people say they want, and unfortunately, they're often associated with reduced quality and often quantity of life. So in theory, advanced directives, or living wills, ought to bridge that gap between the care that patients say they want and the care that patients actually receive. ADs have the potential to provide really valuable insight into patients' wishes and help both family and physicians guide treatment. However, completion rates really aren't where we want them to be, and advanced directives haven't really been shown to reduce costs or improve outcomes. So there are a lot of reasons why it's likely that people don't want to complete advanced directives. People could fall prey to procrastination, continue to put it off because of how difficult and unpleasant it is to think about one's own mortality. There could be issues related to access or confusion about who to talk to about these issues. The concepts of optimism bias and framing are common in human decision making and might also be relevant to advanced directive completion as well. Many patients are likely to believe that their loved ones already know their preferences. However, there's pretty compelling evidence to the contrary. And while ADs are often framed as an opportunity for patients to control their care and to reduce family burden, these might not be compelling to patients. So at present, there's really no robust conceptual framework which exists to help us understand motivations for and barriers to advanced directive completion or patients' perceptions of advanced directives. So what we wanted to do was to explore and describe patients' understanding of advanced directives and perceptions of their utility. So we conducted a series of semi-structured individual interviews with patients who are receiving outpatient chemotherapy at the Perelman Center for Advanced Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. We did these interviews with patients who, some of whom had advanced directives or reported that they had them, and others who did not report having an advanced directive. So people who were eligible were over the age of 18, were fluent in English, and all of them had a terminal oncologic disease, so things such as multiple myeloma, AML, or stage 4 lung cancer. These are just examples. All the interviews that we did were audio recorded and transcribed, and we used a modified grounded theory approach, which is an inductive process. So like I said earlier, as you analyze the data, you kind of continue to generate new hypotheses and new questions from those themes. So we completed 20 total interviews, 10 with people who had advanced directives and 10 with those who didn't. And some of the most salient themes, among others, were knowledge and understanding of advanced directives, also logistical considerations, things such as who do I go to, when, you know, where do I go, legality issues, cost issues. We also heard about people's perceived usefulness of advanced directives, and also how writing down your wishes impacts your family. So after coding and analyzing, we found that all the patients who had not completed advanced directives felt that they didn't have sufficient knowledge about them. They felt like they didn't know much. So one of the patients said, "I just don't know. I just know just very little, and that's the truth. I have questions about it at times, but right now I don't even remember what the answers were to some of those. So in terms of process, the majority, 8 out of 10, had completed their advance directive with their lawyer. And not one person mentioned actually talking to their physician about the completion or discussions about end-of-life care. And so while people were talking to their lawyers, they weren't talking to their physicians. One person said, "We got it through our lawyer. It was a part of the package with the will." We also found that when we described what an advance directive does, the majority of people felt that they were useful for medical decision making. However, many of those same people who thought that advance directives were useful didn't think that they were necessarily suitable for them. So despite the fact that all the participants had advanced cancer, they didn't think that they were sick enough. So we thought this was a really interesting disconnect between perceived and personal utility. One person said, "I do believe that they're useful. However, my husband and I don't have them because we don't think it's necessary." And another thing we found was that people who valued aiding their family in these decisions wanted to reduce burden on their family. So one patient said, "This way the family doesn't have to fight because everything will be in place and it would take a lot of pressure off the family." So we see that poor understanding and knowledge of advance directives is one of the reasons for low completion rates. And also we see that many patients don't believe that they're sick enough to benefit from an advance directive. We also found that family was considered very important to patients during end-of-life decision-making, somewhat unsurprisingly. However, physicians were not identified as participants in education or communication or experiences of advance directives, and instead that lawyers were very significant contributors to end-of-life care planning. So after finding these data from the first 20 interviews, we decided that there was more to learn. So we didn't stop there, and we used the iterative process to our benefit and developed some new questions. We wanted to look at the motivations for and barriers to completing advance directives. We wanted to identify the types of professionals and family members who people thought were best suited for these conversations. And we also wanted to ask patients about what they thought the best timing was to have these conversations. So we also expanded our population. We wanted to understand a wider variety of responses, and so we expanded to outpatient services not only in oncology but also in renal, heart failure, ALS, and pulmonary clinics, and we also included patients that were 50 years and older. All of the participants again had terminal prognoses. So as of now, we've piloted a new interview tool, and we've completed 21 more interviews, and we have some more to go. And we're hoping to finish the rest of the data collection and analysis in the next few months. So while we are still in the process of data collection and analysis, we feel that we've already learned quite a bit. Clearly, there's a need for communication between providers and attorneys in end-of-life care planning, and also there's a really clear need for education about advance directives and how they can be useful. So we hope that by gaining insight into patients' knowledge and perceptions that we might discover ways of unlocking the potential of advance directives as a tool to align the care that people actually say they want with the care that people receive. So I'll take this moment to thank the Fields Program and the STEADI team, and also to thank you for your time, and I guess we'll all take questions and comments.